This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're here with Lynn, Julian and Xiaoning. Now, today is the 50th anniversary of the May 13th riots, which occurred in the aftermath of the 1969 Malaysian general election, when opposition parties made gains at the expense of the ruling coalition, the Alliance Party, which was the precursor of Barisan Nasional. Now, official reports put the number of deaths due to the riots at 196, although Western diplomatic sources at the time suggested a toll of close to 600. With most of the victims Chinese.
And the racial riots led to a declaration of a state of national emergency, or darurat, by the Yang Di Pertuan Agong, resulting in the suspension of the parliament by the Malaysian government. The event is significant in Malaysian politics as it led to the first Prime Minister Tunku Abdul Rahman stepping down from office to be succeeded by Tun Abdul Razak, and eventually resulted in a change in government policy with the implementation of the new economic policy.
So to give us some insight into the background of the policy, we have on the line with us Tan Sri Raymond Navaratnam, chairman of ASLI Centre for Public Policy Studies and a veteran economist, so who helped to formulate the NEP. So thank you for joining us, Tan Sri. How was the NEP formulated? Good morning, Tan Sri. Yes, could you tell us, give us some insight into how the NEP was formulated?
It was a very traumatic experience, and God willing, we all hope and pray it will never happen again. But the time of Merdeka, we were very strong and stable and gained strength as we developed. But somehow or other, the policies were not suitable enough for the changing environment. For example, the Malays, who are the majority race in our country, felt very strongly that they were not getting a good deal and that income distribution was not adequate. Corporate ownership was weak for the Malays. So they felt that the time had come for them to restructure the economy. And I was in the Ministry of Finance, head of Economic Division. So we had an inter-agency group between the Ministry of Finance, led by the EPU, and of course Bank Negara and the Staff Department. And that was the core group with few advisors from the World Bank. And we worked very hard under instructions of Tun Razak and Tansri Ghazali Shafi to be able to come up with a new economic policy. Its goals were two aims. One was to reduce poverty, and I would strongly emphasize regardless of race. Secondly, was to restructure the economy to remove the identification of race with occupation. In other words, in those days, in Kuala Lumpur, for example, the Malays were mostly in Kampung Baru. It took a long time before we have now a nice mixed society, community. And this was reflected in the structure of the economy. They were mostly rural. And poverty was also very, very significant in the rural areas. So we had to change these things. And I think we succeeded well for a long time until politics, frankly, to my mind, got into the picture. And the civil service, being mainly Malay, I think had a problem looking after the multiracial aspect of our development. And so it got the NEP, which was laudable, which had the right goal of removing poverty regardless of race and restructuring society, because at that time, most of the businessmen, small business and not corporate like now, were in Chinese hands. Then most of the agriculture, the rubber, especially palm oil, were in the hands of the Malays and some Indians.
Tan Sri, it's very interesting and even surprising when you say that the NEP had a national unity agenda, because many people will think that this was mainly the domain of achieving Bumiputra equality. Of course, we'll never know a Malaysia without the NEP, but do you think that a needs-based policy, on hindsight, and needs-based is something that we're talking about today, do you think that this would have been a better solution for Malaysia at that point in time? And what were the other alternatives on the table at that point in time?
I think you're right. You know, that people were traumatized the officials I knew, my colleagues from the same University of Malaya in Singapore. There was only one university for both territories. We were all buddies, very close. But after 1969, many of them, because of the trauma, were very, very keen to rush the to correct the imbalance. You're right, though. If we had not followed racial policies, but gone on a needs-based platform, we would have done much, much better. People don't grudge the Malays or anybody else being uplifted from poverty. But what they grudge is, why he gets something, I don't get something. I am in the same position or worse off. And this applies not only for poverty, agriculture, licenses, permits, education, scholarships. It breeds resentment. So when you talk about national unity, it's very difficult to achieve if you treat people differently. And as has been proven worldwide, whenever you have racial policies and not needs-based economic, socio-economic, and political policies, you get into trouble at some time. And so I am delighted that after 50 years, I think, of NEP, you have the new economic model, which is income-based, needs-based. You want to help the poor regardless of race. And if you pursue that sincerely, I think we're out of the woods and we can look forward to a stronger, happier, more united Malaysia.
Tan Sri, do you think that the NEP achieved its objectives and goals?
Yes and no. You see, poverty eradication was a major achievement recognized worldwide by the World Bank, IMF, everybody. We did a good job. And through FELDA schemes and rural development led by Tun Razak, who used to go in his helicopter all around the country inspecting, checking to see whether the projects were being implemented. And that kind of zeal and enthusiasm, and the civil service was behind him because they recognized that they're doing good for their own people. After Merdeka, that was a great sense of realization. I'm working for my own country, for my own people, for my own leaders, not the British. And that had a major psychological impact on the public service. And so we delivered. And that kind of spirit, however, especially on the corporate side, it began to breed cronies. And you had crony capitalism creep in, and the political elite benefited from it. And even the Malays did not benefit as much as they should have.
Thank you so much, Tan Sri. That was Tan Sri Raymond Navaratnam, chairman of ASLI Centre for Public Policy Studies. And he thinks that the NEP, his response to the question of whether the NEP has achieved its objectives was a yes and no, because on the one hand, it has addressed the problem of reducing poverty somewhat, and also one of the objectives that he earlier stated, which was removing the correlation between race and occupation in the country, but at the same time, it gave rise to a political elite.
Yeah, that's right. I think that the NEP, while it had its original historical noble objectives, it was hijacked along the way, particularly by politicians from, let's say, the 80s and 90s, who just hijacked that and took that as a blank check, you know, a carte blanche to launch into cronism. You know, we saw the very famous dime boys in the 90s, right, who, because of the NEP, gave them an excuse to do that, to do what they did.
It gave rise to things like APs or so, which still exist today. So in a way, maybe we should relook at NEP. It's a Malaysia Baru, right? And it should be a needs base. I don't know. That's my view.
Okay. And of course, on the in other news today, on the 16th day of Datuk Sri Najib Razak's trial, a witness testimony revealed that KWAP had breached its investment policy and guidelines to approve two loans, which totaled an amount of 4 billion ringgit to SRC International. And this raises the question from the public regarding the pension fund. Is QAP allowed to operate like a commercial lender?
And the role of CUAP is that it is tasked to manage pensions of the Malaysia's civil servants. This is very different from the EPF, which is a private contribution of employees of private companies in Malaysia. Essentially, CUAP has a mandate to manage its pension of its recipients and to generate sufficient returns to government servants.
CUAP receives funds from statutory bodies, local authorities and government agencies. And as of March 2019, CUAP actually has 187,000 contributors, the largest of which is actually University Technology Mara.
So since CUAP's inception under the Retirement Act in 2007, the fund has seen an average growth of 12% annually. It grew to 141 billion ringgit at the end of 2017. And so the loans that CUAP has given comprised several conventional loans and Islamic financing to federal and state governments, public authorities, corporate bodies, which the government had an interest in, and companies approved by CUAP's investment panel. Now, that's an interesting angle there, because who makes up the CUAP investment panel? That's a chair appointed by the Finance Ministry, a representative from the Finance Ministry, the current CUAP CEO as secretary, as well as four individuals from either the public or private sectors. Now, we're coming up on the 7:30 news, after which we will have more international news for you after that. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.